And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find out more about us at investinghope.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those places. You can read our blog at our website. Listen to this show via podcast on our website and Podbeam and iTunes. This week we have a lot to talk about, and as I often am, I'm joined today by a guest as we look at a couple things that we're going to discuss. Pregnancy center work, we're going to discuss a Supreme Court case coming up in March, and also this week with the Senate failing to even, because of a filibuster, to even take up the pain capable bill. We'll briefly talk about that as well with my guest, who is Tom Glessner, the president of National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, a friend and a great advocate for life, and has been working in the pro-life movement for a very, very long time. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Andrew. I'm really pleased and happy to be with you.
Thank you. So before we, I know we have a couple things we want to talk about today, but before we get into the big deal of the Supreme Court case that we know NIFLA and Alliance Defending Freedom going to be fighting for pregnancy centers at the Supreme Court in March, let's briefly give the listeners kind of context of what NIFLA does, where NIFLA came from, and the importance of NIFLA's work with pregnancy centers across the country.
Sure. I am an attorney and started NIFLA in 1992 to be a legal organization to provide legal help, consultation, training, education to pro-life pregnancy centers, because at that time, and even prior to 92, really in the early 80s, pro-life pregnancy centers were under pretty vicious attack by the other side. Planned Parenthood and National Abortion Rights Action League and others have just been relentlessly pursuing and attacking the work of pro-life pregnancy centers. So we started NIFLA to provide some legal counsel, help, training, and guidelines to help them avoid those attacks if they can, but if they are attacked, to not only survive them, but beat back the slander that's thrown at them. So we are a network now, a national network of almost 1,500 pro-life centers in all 50 states, and of those 1,200, your center included, is a licensed medical clinic providing medical service such as ultrasound, STI testing and treatment, and other medical services. So that is who we are, and we're a national network that are hopefully providing some help out there.
So when you started NIFLA in the early 90s, I'm sure you had goals and you had aspirations for what it could be. Fast forward now to 2018, And looking back over the years, is it what you hoped it would be? Is it bigger than what you thought it would be? Or is it right where you kind of felt like we may be in 2018?
Well, honestly, I told my wife the other day, I said, I feel like we've left AAA ball and gone into the major leagues, and in the first year gone to the World Series. So it's kind of, with the Supreme Court case that we're involved in and finally making it to the Supreme Court, I feel like it's really, really jumped a notch or two in the intensity level, as well as what we've been able to accomplish. So the Lord has been good. I don't think I had any specific expectations of where we'd be in 25 years. I don't think I think that far ahead. I just knew we had to do this. We had to provide help and consultation and guidelines, and it just is what it is now, and here we are.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people that may be listening to this conversation that are pro-life and see themselves as pro-life and maybe saying, well, I don't understand why NIFLA or why pregnancy centers would even need to have a legal arm and need to be thinking about that work. But it's important to, if you understand the political side of things, then what you know, and this is what we're going to talk about here in a second, is NARAL and the abortion lobby, the abortion industry, are very much active and engaged in state legislatures, in the federal government at the D.C. level. And so in their engagement, they are at times even writing legislation that is being carried by politicians that then directly impact pregnancy centers. And that's where we are with the law in California that we're seeing and ultimately going to the Supreme Court with. So give us a quick background on how the abortion lobby, really since Roe v. Wade and maybe even before then, has had a a direct line to making things difficult for those that would stand for life?
Well, actually, Planned Parenthood in the early 80s plotted in their New York office, and this is all documented, by the way, so people ask, I can give you documentation
sure.
on it, but they plotted in their New York office to launch a national, this is in the early 80s now. How old are you, Andrew?
I'm 33.
This was before you were born, buddy. You weren't even born, okay? 1981, Planned Parenthood launched this vicious, evil, nasty attack against the work of pro-life pregnancy centers. We called them crisis pregnancy centers back then.
Sure.
And the line of attack was these centers are, they called bogus clinics. Bogus clinics. They're fraudulent. They lie to women about abortion. They illegally practice medicine. They violate consumer protection laws in their advertising. And they took that line of attack in the early 80s, and they have relentlessly pursued it. They filed lawsuits. They have worked with attorneys general from various states to try to close pregnancy centers down. And it's just been, you know, my wife and I founded the first crisis pregnancy center in the Northwest in 1982 in Seattle, where we're originally from. And we got hit with this immediately. And they just haven't let up. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is they have been totally unsuccessful
mm-hmm.
In closing down centers. In fact, back in the early 80s when we started, we were like the 25th pregnancy center in the Christian Action Council Network, which is now CareNet. Now there are almost 3,000 centers around the country. But they beat us up. They slandered us. They smeared us. They've really been pretty nasty. And while they haven't closed centers down, they've created an atmosphere of suspicion in many parts of our culture about the work of pro-life centers. And that people say, oh, yeah, you're those bogus clinics out there. You want to make a woman think she's going to have an abortion, she comes to you, and you want to trick her. You know, that's a response
right.
of many people. So they've been very successful in that regard, but they've been totally unsuccessful in closing centers down. Now, in the last 10 years, they have attempted some pretty mean-spirited and vicious legislation that, if passed by different states, would really impact the centers and probably close them down. But they tried it three times in the state of Washington and lost. And the state of Washington is very liberal and very pro-Planned
sure.
Parenthood. They tried it twice in the state of Oregon and lost both times. They're very liberal and very pro-abortion. They tried it once in Maryland, which is also a very liberal pro-abortion state as far as its politics goes. They realized that we were organized enough and we could work the political system enough that even in their most friendly states, they couldn't get this stuff passed. So what they did then, they started working with city councils and county councils to pass municipal ordinances, which are the same laws as the state laws, except they only would apply within the jurisdiction of the city or the county. So they did get things passed in New York City, in Baltimore, in Montgomery County, Maryland, in Austin, Texas. But we fought them in court, and all those laws have been enjoined as unconstitutional. The laws basically require centers to post signs in their waiting areas in all different sorts of languages, Chinese and Vietnamese and Spanish and English, and in big, huge fonts. And the signs basically tell women, don't really come here, don't trust these people because they're pro-life and they're not going to help you. That's basically the tenor of the signs. Courts held that that's compelled speech and it violates First Amendment of the Constitution. Well, we're on a winning streak here, and I'm getting a little cocky. But then in 2015, the state of California passes a law that mandates the pro-life pregnancy centers, and specifically the medical clinics, post a sign that advises their patients on how to get a state-funded abortion with a phone number to call to get the abortion process started. So we couldn't stop that in California. We sued in federal district court because it's the Ninth Circuit, and I think people listening understand when you say the Ninth Circuit, that's the most liberal, far-left federal district in the country. And we didn't expect to win at the lower levels. In fact, I said all along, we're going to lose until we get this to the Supreme Court, if we can get it to the Supreme Court. So we did lose in district court as far as our motion for a preliminary injunction. We then appealed to the Court of Appeals and lost there. And then we filed a petition for a writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court. Now, to show you how God has been with us the whole time, I mean, I was not surprised we were losing in the Ninth Circuit. But to get to the Supreme Court, they have 8,000 petitions a year, and they only grant about 100. So that's about a 1% chance of getting your case to the Supreme Court. You don't have an automatic right to appeal. And so the mathematical odds are very, very hard, if not impossible, to ever get to the Supreme Court. Well, we got a Thanksgiving present last November when the court announced they were going to hear our case. And they have a scheduled argument for the case March 20th, just coming up. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's an exciting time as we're going to get the platform, I believe, because it's Supreme Court cases, just because there's not many of them, I think, garner a certain amount of coverage. Now we know that we just had 500,000 roughly people in D.C. at the March for Life, and it received about 2 minutes on the news.
Right.
But what I do believe is I think that we are at a time where pro-lifers feel a sense of urgency, and they also feel a sense of hey, we may be on the cusp of something special. And so I think the platform is starting to grow, and I think the messaging is to a place where, at least in my time on this planet, listening to politicians, listening to folks articulate the pro-life stance, I've seen some that have really struggled to do that well. And what we're beginning to see is people like Ben Sasse and Senator Lankford and others that are articulating the pro-life stance at a level that we haven't seen in a long time, and they're we're starting to see some folks, I believe, start to go, hold on, that you're saying that it's life, you're saying that you just want to, you know, curtail abortion at 20 weeks like we saw this week in the Senate, and you're also saying now that they're trying to silence pregnancy centers. And I told my staff this morning, I said it boggles my mind that they seek to silence us, where no heartbeats are ever extinguished inside a pregnancy center. And they're in abortion clinics, you see a million abortions every single year. And they want us to stop doing what we're doing. Well, we're in reality, we're not hurting anyone. We're not harming people. No lives are being lost. We're just trying to serve the men and women of our community and truly show them that there's options in front of them. And one of those being life. And when we come back from the break, Tom, I want to continue down this path and talk about, if we can, kind of make some guesses. What do we see happening at the Supreme Court level? What's the gut feeling? And do you see some folks coming out with, you know, you're writing at a number of different places, and have you seen some support come out over the last couple of years that you hadn't seen in the past? And we'll talk about that when we come back. So today, as we have a conversation with the president of NIFLA, Tom Glessner, we're looking at the law that was passed in the state of California that really focused and attacked pregnancy centers, and they even exempted out other medical institutions to go really directly at the pregnancy center movement. And NIFLA took that to the courts and lost a couple of times, and then petitioned for the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has said, we're going to hear this case on March 20th, right, Tom, is the day. And so as we look to that, kind of give us a sense of what your gut's telling you. Have you seen some support come your way that you didn't anticipate would have come when this was announced?
Well, we're seeing support coming from all over the place. I tell you, one of the things that shocks people when I say this is this will most likely shock your listeners. It shocked me when I realized it. But the state of Hawaii passed an identical law to California in 2016, summer 2016. We filed suit against Hawaii in the Ninth Circuit again for an injunction, anticipating we're going to lose it to the Ninth Circuit, but holding out hope that the Supreme Court's going to intervene. And because the Supreme Court has intervened in California, the Hawaii case is put on hold. But the reason I raise Hawaii is the law is almost identical, except there's one difference in Hawaii than California. And that is there's one pregnancy medical clinic in Honolulu that is not incorporated because they are an arm of a church. They work inside the church, literally inside the building of the church. Guess what that means? That means the church must post this sign in their narthex advising women on how to obtain a state-funded abortion with a phone number to call. Now, this thing is vicious, and it's as important as the work of the pregnancy centers are, and they're extremely important. I've committed my life to helping them. This goes beyond this. This goes to the very heart and soul of the First Amendment, freedom of religion and freedom of speech. And so if we lose our case, I would say the First Amendment is gutted. Now, you ask, what's my gut feeling? I'll use that word, what's my gut feeling? We're going to win the case. I believe we're going to win the case. I believe that there's enough votes on the court, and I also believe that it may be a much bigger victory than most people are thinking. A lot of people say, oh, you went 5-4 in one of these controversial cases. Well, a win is a win, and I'll take a 5-4 win, but I think it's going to be larger than that. I really do. Because the liberals on the court, when you deal with free speech issues, they know what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Right. And that's the interesting part is when we have this conversation, it is a, and I've talked about this, you know, on the podcast and in different times, is it's not, this isn't just a case that Christians need to be concerned about. Certainly Christians need to be concerned about it, but it really means everyone that concerns themselves with the First Amendment, that this is very important. When the state starts to tell you, you must do this, and you are a private entity, especially one that holds to a certain set of convictions, then that goes to a whole different level of the state, you know, they want to say compelling, but forcing pregnancy centers that get up. The reason we open our doors is to serve the men and women of our communities, and certainly not to encourage or promote or refer for abortions. I mean, this is almost as if they're saying, we also want you to put them in your car and drive them over to the clinic. And that's the bigger concern for pregnancy centers. And I'm thinking in the state of Tennessee, we have a very conservative legislature and currently very conservative governor. And so we don't see a lot of the most of the laws that we see here in the state are very pro-life. And I think a bill was introduced just this week here in the state saying seeking to outlaw abortions as soon as a heartbeat is detected. Now, obviously, that's probably going to get caught up in the courts. But the fact remains that the legislature here is not really a detriment to pregnancy centers as it stands today. But we all know that could change. That could change next election. And so, as we think about this, what is for a person that doesn't really follow the politics of it all, but says I'm pro-life, I care about pregnancy centers, I support pregnancy centers. Why is this such a big deal that the Supreme Court not only took this case up, but the fact that we may win, and I believe there may be more eyes on us than we've had in a long time, where we can really articulate the message of what we do as pregnancy centers.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, let's think on the negative side for a minute. Let's look at the glass not being half empty or half full, but it's half empty. If we lose this case, what's going to happen? Well, first of all, I predict that it will start in all the blue states, politically blue states. Those states will adopt laws.
Yes.
Identical to California. So virtually pregnancy centers in all the blue states are going to be in big trouble. But it'll go beyond. Now, I live in Virginia. Virginia is what we call a purple state. But we are only one vote away in our House of Representatives and our Senate from being a totally blue state. And the governor is a far-left liberal. And so Virginia could go that way. So if we lose this battle and California law is upheld, that's the first thing that's going to happen. But the second thing that we have to realize is this. This is goes beyond the pro-life center's freedom of speech. This impacts everybody. Could the government legitimately pass a law that mandates that Alcoholics Anonymous post a sign in their counseling area advising their patients or their clients of where the local liquor store is? Well, if we lose, why not?
Right.
You know, and if the alcohol industry has enough sufficient power in the legislature to pass a bill like that, then they can go for it. Will churches, you know, have to be posting signs that violate their fundamental convictions or be closed down? Well, if we lose, that could be around the corner. You can think of all sorts of scenarios here. This is the most serious assault on our First Amendment liberties that has ever happened. The heart and soul of the First Amendment, there are five freedoms in the First Amendment: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of the press, and the freedom to petition your representatives for redress of grievances. But of those five freedoms in the First Amendment, the heart and soul of that amendment are the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech. And if we lose our case, those two freedoms are gutted. And I would have to sadly say we have no First Amendment anymore, at least a First Amendment that isn't anything close to what it was supposed to be. And so this is a really serious thing.
Yeah,
Go ahead. Well, I just get really frustrated when I hear Christians and pastors, they get this information, they say, well, yeah, it's important, but so is our annual church picnic coming up, too. So, you know,
right.
I mean, you know, I just, you know, it's just wake up, people. Wake up.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we have to, you know, and I've written and spoke at a number of different times about how we don't put our hope in nine judges in black robes, but we also need to stand up when the government is trying to overreach and affect the work that we're doing, and certainly affect our constitutional rights and the First Amendment. And so this is one of those moments where we put up or shut up. Walk us through some of the folks that have stood up and said, not only do we support NIFLA and Alliance for Defending Freedom and Pregnancy Centers, but we want to let our voice be heard. What are some of the organizations that have stepped out to support?
Well, we have right now 30 amicus briefs. Those are friend of the court briefs that have been filed. One brief was filed by 135 congressmen and women. That's a huge number.
That's big, yeah.
One brief, I love this one. One brief was filed, was initiated by the Attorney General of the state of Texas, signed on to by 21 other attorneys general. And I'm sorry, I don't know if the Tennessee Attorney General signed on to that brief or not. Do you know?
I don't know. I'm assuming yes, but I don't know off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, well, I not knowing the politics of Tennessee, I assume your Attorney General is pro-life.
Yes.
Then I'd be very surprised if
yes.
he did not sign on. But so we have that brief. We have a brief filed by different organizations. One brief that just really touches my heart is a brief that goes through the stories of 13 women who have been to pregnancy centers. Some had abortions and were post-abortive. Others were ready to have abortions, but changed their mind after being at the pregnancy center. And that brief just is powerful at telling the stories of the work of pregnancy centers around the country. You see, your work needs to be told. People don't know about you unless they are personally involved in a situation where you had to intervene. Even church people, you know, might know there's something. Well, I know there's a crisis pregnancy center or something like that out there, but they're not really that aware unless something really hits them. So they need to be told. But the pregnancy centers across the country are, I'm convinced, are the ones standing in the gap for our nation, because how can God continue to allow this bloodshed to be done without eventually intervening with judgment on the nation?
Right.
I mean, 60 million since 1973, 900,000 a year, one out of every four pregnancies ending in abortion. On and on and on I can give these things, and maybe your listeners don't understand it. But in the words of Thomas Jefferson, and he was referencing slavery at this time, he said, "I tremble in fear for my country when I realize God is just and his justice does not sleep forever." Well, we know when that God's judgment came on a very bloody civil war where 700,000 men lost their lives in the bloodiest conflict we've ever faced in a four-year period. We know that. So it's a pregnancy center movement, I believe, that's standing in the gap, that the hand of judgment of God has been stayed because of the mercy, compassion, and love the pregnancy center movement has for these women and for their babies. That's why the abortion industry wants to take them down.
Absolutely.
Abortion industry, take you down, you know, then there's nothing to stop them.
And as we stop right there and take another break, when we come back, what I'd like to do is shift, if we can, and still obviously talking about what's going on with the Supreme Court, but I'd like to talk briefly on the pain-capable bill that failed to even make it to the floor because of filibuster yesterday in the Senate. If we could start there when we come back, Tom, that'd be great. So as many of you know, that the House brought up the pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which ultimately would outlaw abortions after 20 weeks. And it passed the House. The Senate brought it up this week. And because of a filibuster, they would have had enough for a majority vote, but because of a filibuster, they didn't have enough for 60 votes to stop that. So the bill didn't even make it to the floor for an actual vote or a discussion even on the bill itself. So Tom, as we look at where our country is currently around the world in terms of abortion laws, we are in the company of North Korea, of Vietnam, and of China. As the most egregious abortion laws, as far as the most liberal abortion laws. And it's interesting to me that those that would fight against us and fight against seeing abortion ended claim to be progressives, but not voting on the bill yesterday is the most regressive thing I can think of.
Well, it's a tragedy. It's a disgrace. It's where we're at. And, you know, I have a lot of opinions about the filibuster rule. I think the filibuster
sure.
rule is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We have a majority that voted for it. We just don't have 60. And that's because of the rules regarding a filibuster in the U.S. Senate. I think those rules ought to go, but even the Republicans who are conservative pro-life say they want to keep the filibuster rule because they say, well, if we're in the minority, we'll use it. Yeah, they would, except that the other side has already said if they get the majority, they're going to get rid of it.
They're going to get, exactly, yeah.
We're going to get rid of it now, and then we can get these things passed. Same thing as the funding of Planned Parenthood. $500 million of our tax dollars go to Planned Parenthood, and we can't stop that because of the filibuster rule. We have a majority votes. We don't have 60 votes. So Part of it is the political system. Part of it is, frankly, and I don't want to get partisan here except to say that, and this did not used to be the case, by the way, but it is now. The Democrat Party is so owned by the abortion lobby. You didn't have one Democrat vote yesterday in favor of the partial of the pain-capable act. Not one. You don't have one Democrat who's going to vote to defund Planned Parenthood. What happened to that party? What happened? When I got started, Andrew, in the early 80s, Ronald Reagan was elected president, but the House of Representatives was strongly Democrat. Guess what? The House of Representatives had a strong majority of pro-lifers because they had a strong, strong number of pro-life Democrats. It was the Republican Senate at that time that was pro-abortion. So what happened to this party? What happened? I thought they were for the little guy. I thought they were for compassion and caring. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been an interesting time. I was, and I've said this before on the show multiple times. I was a political science major. I mean, I've always lived and breathed politics for a long time, and then the Lord brought me to, you know, kind of shifted some things for me and showed some idolatry issues that I was having and kind of brought me out of that and brought me ultimately to hope here in Knoxville, and now I don't see things from there are times certainly where I go back to that and look through political lens, but for me this is especially obviously I want to see a law that just says, hey, I want to see Roe v. Wade overturned, I want it to go back to the states, and then we can go from there. But this particular piece of legislation, there's no with the advancement in science and research and technology, there's no arguing what is going on at 20 weeks. There's just the facts are facts, and what we know is because of science and ultrasound imaging that viability happens earlier now than it used to. That surgeries in utero occur, and guess what? They give anesthesia to the baby in utero. Why? Because they want to make the baby comfortable because the baby feels pain. What we know through ultrasound is the baby stretches and coils and has hiccups and is practicing breathing and has a heartbeat and its own DNA and 10 fingers and 10 toes and eyebrows and all of these things. I mean, that there's no logical argument against the bill that was up yesterday. And what really kind of hurts me is when I see folks, regardless of what aisle they find themselves on, high-fiving because they defeated with filibuster yesterday that bill from being discussed. They're high-fiving, and we have people walking on in our country that were born at 20 weeks and lived. Mm-hmm. And so... It's no long. There was a time when we said, "Well, if they just would admit that it's a life, then we win the argument." Well, now that some of them are even admitting that, and it still doesn't bother them that's what's happening.
The scary thing is that the issue isn't when does life begin, because everybody knows life begins at conception. The issue is an unborn baby a human being? Of course, an unborn baby is a human being, but the legal issue is despite its humanity. Is it a person protected by law? And the courts have said no. And so history shows that when you want to abuse and enslave a group of people, the first thing you do to justify that is to dehumanize them. So black slaves were not fully human beings, and that's why they could be enslaved. The Indians were not fully human beings. That's why they could be treated the way they were treated. So you dehumanize Jewish people. In Nazi Germany, were not fully human, or they were less human than the Aryan race, and therefore we can exterminate them. So the first thing you do to justify that is to dehumanize. And so the courts have dehumanized the unborn child by saying it may be human, but it's not a person, therefore abortion is okay. But I don't even know what that means. Ask any 3-year-old or 4-year-old or 5-year-old maybe what a person is, and they'll say a human. Go to the dictionary and look up the definition of person. It's a human being. But the courts have said, no, you may be human, but you're not a person, and only persons get legal protection.
And that's
the scary thing. So where does that go? If we can dehumanize human beings and justify killing them, it just doesn't end in the womb.
And that's why I think the platform that we're going to have on March 20th, leading up to that date and days after, to articulate our message of the pregnancy center movement, the pro-life movement as a whole, why we get up every day and do the work that we do, why you and your wife started a center in Washington years ago, why you started NIFLA, why you partnered with CareNet, why we did all of these things. It isn't simply because we're just hateful people. It is because we care deeply about life. And I think that the platform that we're going to have is something that we don't need to take for granted over the next a few months, and I do believe what we're going to see, and I'm with you. I think my gut, you know, whatever that is, a lot of times I have feelings in my gut that turn out to be wrong, but I believe we are going to win this case, and ultimately the light that will shine on that is going to be impressive, because I do think if we win, I think we'll hear a statement from the White House. I think the Vice President will certainly make a statement about that, so it's going to give us an opportunity to really articulate the message that we have for not just this country, but for the world, saying life has value. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how you can learn more about NIFLA, how you can partner with NIFLA in this court case, and how you can help pregnancy centers out across the country. We'll be back in a sec. We've been having a great conversation today with Tom Glessner of NIFLA. As we finish up, Tom, how can folks partner with NIFLA? Where can they learn more about the work being done through your organization and to kind of prepare for what's going to happen on March 20th?
Sure. Our website is NIFLA, NIFLA.org. People, we've been saying NIFLA. I don't think they realize that's a long name,
National Institute
of Family and Life Advocates. But NIFLA.org, there's a number of things I want people to be aware of. First of all, we launched today a continuous 24-hour prayer vigil that starts on the 1st, 2 days from now, and we'll go through the day of argument. And what it is, you can go to the website, and you can go to the menu on the left and click that on, and you'll see prayer vigil. Click on prayer vigil, and you'll go to a calendar, and you can select a day that you're going to commit to organizing 24-hour prayer. So how do you do that? Well, you know, get 8 people to pray 3 hours, 12 people to pray 2, whatever. You can do that, but you're committing for that day. And now that website has prayer items, the names of the justices to pray for. You have a link to pray for all the California centers. There are prayer items there. There are prayer verses there. We want a continual 24-hour prayer going on beginning February 1 through the day of argument. So everybody listening can be involved in that. I'd say go to your church and get your church to pick a day and pray for this. Then we have a rally. And Andrew, we'd like you to be there.
Yes,
you
know? I'm looking forward to it. I've already got it on my calendar.
Good. Maybe you can do a broadcast or something from the steps of the Supreme Court. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. But actually, I just realized it's cherry blossom season, so you need to make travel arrangements pretty quickly if you're going to do
yes.
it. I mean, you get a flight in, but you know we're a little worried with cherry blossom season. It may be hard to find hotels. We've got some hotels lined up, but we don't know how many are coming in. But come to the Washington, D.C. area to attend the rally outside the court on March 20th. The rally will start at 9 a.m. on the steps of the court. We'll last till noon. Argument begins at 10 o'clock, and we attorneys will be in the courtroom at 10 to 11 arguing. We'll come back down, and we'll address the rally and the media and all of that. It's going to be a big event. It's history. Be part of history. Join us. You know, this is an opportunity that will not come again, so don't miss it, because it's going to be exciting, and we're going to show the world and the nation what we believe and what we stand for, and so be part of that. So those are 2 things. 3 things I'd just say. NIFLA is a nonprofit organization, exists on donations and support, so if you feel moved, on our website there's a donate button, so I always want to say that.
But, sure.
We appreciate friends who can help us continue our work.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for doing what you do and really for leading the way for people like me who kind of came onto the scene, you know, late, being born in the 80s, and you were already being a life advocate in the 80s. And so I just want to say from the millennial generation, we thank you and are grateful for you and others that said, hey, we can't just sit around and be on the sidelines. We need to get into this and really stand for the unborn and stand for moms in the process as well, which is what we do. We're able to do at pregnancy centers and leading the charge and seeing pregnancy centers go medical and, you know, serving at Hope Resource Center, where we've just added well woman care and doing a number of different things from the medical standpoint with our nurse practitioners and our nurses. It's nice to know and to see those NIFLA tips and to know that y'all have our back just in case anything like this were to happen in the state of Tennessee that California pregnancy centers are facing. So tell your team thanks. Tell Ann I said hello. Tell your wife I said hello. And we are just grateful to partner with you in this work.
Well, let me say to your listeners, you got a pregnancy center there in your area in Knoxville that you should be very, very proud of. And Andrew, you are a great leader. And we appreciate you a lot. We look forward to coming out this year for our course and all. So.
Yes, going to be fun. Going to be a fun time for sure.
Yep. God
all right.
Bless.
Thanks so much, Tom. We are grateful for the work that NIFLA is doing, and really, folks, as you think through how we are to partner and how we are to stand up for life, this is why we're partnered with NIFLA. And I know that I get on here every week, and I spent time last week, and at times sound like a broken record as I say, look, we don't put our hopes in the courts. We don't put our hopes in the legislature or the Oval Office or the Senate or the House or anything like that. We get up every day to serve the men and women of this community and to stand up for the unborn, certainly. But when times come like this, where we have legislation that is crafted solely for the purpose of closing down pregnancy centers. And let's not misconstrue what is happening in California. That is the goal. This piece of legislation was put in place not to make it easier for women to get abortion, not to really celebrate women's health, not to encourage more choices. This legislation was crafted with one goal in mind: create more abortions and silence the pregnancy center movement. Get the pregnancy centers out of the way. If they won't close their doors, then by golly, we're going to make it so hard for them that they are referring people to us. That is what the abortion lobby is doing in California. And that is what the governor did when he signed this piece of legislation. This isn't partisan for me. This is a direct attack on the First Amendment. This is a direct attack on pro-life pregnancy centers. And so I talk about this because I want y'all to stand with us in this. Pray for the pregnancy centers. Pray for NIFLA. Pray for Alliance for Defending Freedom. I'm hoping to have somebody from that organization on in the next few weeks as they're partnering with NIFLA for this case. This is a big deal, not just for Christians, not just for pro-lifers. It's a big deal across the board. And I pray that Tom is right. I pray that we not only win, but we win big. And we've seen a number of folks across the country come out and support this case and the pregnancy center movement. And so what that means, and what I was discussing with Tom, is on March 20th, the days leading up to that and the days after that, the pro-life movement is going to have a platform. And more, I guess even more specifically, the pregnancy center movement is going to have a platform to articulate what it is we do and why we do the work that we do at pregnancy centers, like Hope Resource Center. And so when NIFLA reached out to me and said, we would love for you to speak at the rally on the steps of the Supreme Court, that isn't a political issue. That's a platform provided to say, this is why pregnancy center work is so important. This is why the pro-life movement is so important. It is time for a generation to recognize that a generation has been aborted, and that is not okay. And so that's what we're going to do. That's what I do every week here on Tuesdays. That's what I do every day at work. And that's what we're going to do in Washington on March 20th. We appreciate your prayers. Talk to you next week.